Welcome to the Internet Advisor Podcast. I'm your host and producer, Foster Brown. Along with my co-host, Gary Baker, and our team of experts, we've been helping people like you since 1998 with your computer problems, introducing you to valuable resources, and promoting tech enterprise throughout Michigan. The Internet Advisor is a two-hour podcast recorded every week at the studios of historic WJR Radio in Detroit. Both hours of the show are available each week on this podcast and are streamed to our affiliates across the state of Michigan. We're also proud to be part of Detroit's newest and fastest-growing podcast network, PodcastDetroit.com. And now, here are your hosts with this week's Internet Advisor.
Welcome to the Internet Advisor, your place for answers to your computer questions since 1998, with your co-hosts Gary Baker and Foster Brown and their team of tech experts. The door is always open at InternetAdvisor.net, on Facebook, and through Twitter. But right now it's time to get you in touch with your helpful hosts on this week's edition of Internet Advisor.
Welcome aboard. It's the Internet Advisor. Hi, I'm Foster Brown, co-host of the program and the producer, and what a program we've got lined up today. We're going to be sailing into areas and of dreaming and turning those dreams into reality. We're also going to be talking about this incredible attack that took place on the Internet yesterday, and we're going to get some answers for why that happened, if we can. And that's in the second hour of our program, so please don't go away. Great show lined up for you here on the Internet Advisor today. Well, it's a delight to be back with you again here live on WJR. Of course, we are here 2 hours every Saturday from 4 until 6. And with the football schedule the way it is, every now and then we have to kind of get back behind the line of defense with the guys in green and white. And today we're fortunate.
They're bigger than us.
They certainly are. I don't squabble with them at all. Gary Baker with us in studio and also Ed Rudell. Ed, good to have you back.
Always great to be here, Foster.
Now, guys, today we got a very special program. This first hour, we're going to be meeting some people who have ventured into the world of design in ways that I know Gary had you just sparkling when you came back from that tour.
Absolutely.
Of their company. And that is two fellows. We're going to be talking with Jason Pozzano and Kurt Steckling in just a minute, who are from Vectorform. And I'm fascinated to talk with them about how they started and what they're doing right now. And they were just, as a matter of fact, Automation Alley winners this last
it was on last Friday night, and we did talk a little bit about them on Saturday because I came back from the big Automation Alley gala.
That's right.
That was that they actually had at mm-hmm. the Detroit Yacht Club, and said, Technology Company of the Year, we got to get these guys.
Yeah.
So
my neighbors too, right across the street from me.
That's right.
Above Buffalo Wild Wings. Do you have lunch anywhere else?
Yeah, downtown Royal Oak is our cafeteria, so we have a great time.
Your great selections down there. We also have with us in studio somebody else who's kind of at the other end of the entrepreneurial cycle, and that is Christian Buckner is with us. Christian is with an app actually called GroupNet, right, Christian?
Yep.
Okay, and tell us quickly what your application is about.
Sure, GroupNet is about finding great things to do in Metro Detroit, Royal Oak, downtown Detroit, Corktown, all over. We have over 4,000 things to do in there, great rating system. The idea is trying to get people from Metro Detroit and Detroit doing new things in Detroit, things that they wouldn't otherwise know.
Excellent.
About.
So you just started, right, recently?
Yeah, we just launched in August.
Okay.
And it's a beautiful site. If you haven't gone there, go to our site, internetadvisor.net, and there's a link there that will take you directly
right
over to Christian's site, or you can go directly to your site at
GroupNet.com. Yeah, it's available both on the App Store and in Google Play, so
okay.
Android and iPhone.
And we're going to get plenty of time to talk about it. I thought, Gary, kind of the interesting juxtaposition of a company that's just getting started here, and Kurt and Jason have been around for a while. But before we get there, Ed Rudell, we've got some big things coming up in terms of reveals coming this week from the two major software companies.
Yeah, I only pay attention to one, though.
Okay. That wouldn't be Apple, would it?
Cal, you know, I was counting on Cal, but he's been out not feeling well this week, I think. So, but yeah, Microsoft sent that mysterious note to the press about October 26th, and I forgot how they quoted it, but they, come to us and we will, reveal
Anybody remember what that
was? Do you remember? It was a very mysterious message they sent out.
It was kind of like...
And a lot of people are speculating that Microsoft's going to be releasing basically a Microsoft Surface full-size unit, like a 27-inch.
Oh, that's right. All-in-one kind of thing. Yeah.
And of course, the press is also going nuts about, I wonder if Microsoft's going to give another stab at a Surface phone.
That's right.
You know? And of course, you got the Xbox One, and maybe they'll come out with a 2, just in time for Christmas. You know, the press and a lot of people are speculating what's going on.
Well, it makes sense to have the timing on this. It's perfect for shopping and for letting the people at the retail markets know what's coming down the pipe.
Correct. And of course, you got the Bing, and Microsoft said they're going to roll the, Cortana will be merged within the Bing so that you can speak directly from your PC and do Bing searches that way for your PC.
Okay.
You know, and include that within the Windows 10.
Much of the way you can on Apple, I think, on a Mac right now, if I'm not wrong, you can do that with Siri, I believe.
Siri on Sierra.
On Sierra, right, on the newest of the applications. And then, speaking of the mother of all apples, the major fruit.
I thought he was sick this week.
No.
He'll zing me next week when he gets back.
You'll get that one. It's going to be recorded. Coming up, matter of fact, the next day, it's going to be Apple.
I have no idea.
Yeah.
Really? What? I'm sorry, Foster. Oh, I have no idea what's going on with Apple.
Well,
I've been sort of tied up.
They sent out an equally mysterious announcement.
No.
Saying that they're going to be having a special reveal coming up on the very next day, October 27th. Wonder of wonders. And it looks like new Macs are coming out.
Been waiting years for this one.
All right.
It's been a long, long time. In fact, there's been people that thought that maybe Mac would go away because they hadn't released a new one in so long. And, well... guess what? They're not going away. They're releasing a new one.
So a lot of goodies out there. You can get your shopping list out, I guess.
Just in time for Christmas.
Yeah, that's right. Jason, put that at the top of the list, what you would like. What would you like? What would you shop?
I mean,
definitely the MacBook Pro. You know, the power and the slim package. That's what we need.
Yeah, exactly.
So I'm a MacBook Air person. That's what I use at work, but I just use it just to support other people.
You would admit that on the air?
I know. Well, you know, I keep it in the closet. I don't really bring it out that often.
Although my son loves his. He took that.
Now, what did Justin get?
The MacBook Air.
The 15 or the 13?
13.
Yeah.
Yeah, he loves it.
Fellas, I have the Surface Book, and I'm really proud of it.
Okay.
It's a great piece of hardware. At first, I wasn't sure. There were some kind of initial bugs that had me a little bit turned off, but as I've gotten to know it and use it, it's been just a phenomenal piece of equipment.
Okay, we've heard
I view this as a business tool, but it's also beautiful. I don't feel so jealous now when I look at the Macs and how much prettier they are than my old Lenovo or Sony.
Right. You know, and I love Microsoft's new commercials they have. Look what I could do with my Surface that you can't do on your Mac. Yeah. I could touch the screen, stuff like that, and draw.
Yeah, Christian, what do you use? I'm curious.
MacBook Pro.
MacBook Pro, there you go.
I need something that's a little more powerful doing development, but my big complaint is the weight. It's huge. You know, I carry that thing around in my bag, and it's just hurting.
That's why I've got mine here in the bag,
I love
too.
My Surface. Or you know, that's just, I use it as my personal computer.
Speaking of which, I had to open mine up.
Here, Gary.
Yeah.
All right, coming back, what I want to hear is a little bit of the history. First of all, start with you guys from Jason and Kurt from Vectorform. Find a little bit of what garage you began in Detroit. We're talking with the folks from Vectorform. We'll also be talking to Christian Bruckner. You know, there was a post that I put up that said feast or famine. I think this week is definitely the feast side here at the Internet Advisor. I'm Foster Brown, Gary Baker, Cal. I was going to Cal Carson, but Ed Rudell's in studio here. Cal's got the day off. And a whole bunch of other people. And this first hour of the program, what we're kind of focusing on, or at least struck me as an interesting point of contact, is the balance between some folks who have been, because I know, Gary, over the years, we've talked about promoting businesses here in Michigan, the tech businesses
That's
in particular,
right.
is one of our purposes, as
That's
well
right.
as helping people to enjoy their internet experience, get on the internet, get around it, etc. And so today we have the pleasure of having a couple of those businesses in studio with us. One that's been around for a while, that's Vectorform. And the two main principals to that, pardon me, are Jason Fasano and Kurt Steckling, who are here. Guys, thank you again so much for coming down.
Good afternoon, Gary.
Yeah, it's been delightful to have you with us here. And I have to say, as Gary took a tour of your building and what you guys got going on there and said, you got to have him in. You got him in. You have a dream factory going on there in Royal Oak.
Well, thanks, Foster. I appreciate that.
When you saw the when we were there with the CIO kitchen cabinet, David Behan is the state of Michigan CIO, and he has a group of other CIOs that meet once a month. and you were very gracious to have us in and host us for a meeting. It was wonderful watching, first of all, the scooters running around. The AR, you know, the AV.
We love that one wheel.
the automated reality and...
Augmented reality, excuse me,
and virtual reality. And then the basketball. Got to talk about the basketball.
Yeah, it's like nonstop Christmas in our office. We get all the latest toys years before they come out. And the challenge is we have to find out how to transform the way companies do business with this emerging technology. Yeah. So
and the soccer ball.
But having guests is one of our favorite things to do because that's when we get to actually stop working and play with toys and, you know, kind of share the excitement. So thank you for coming. Tell us
about some of the companies, though, that you've spun off.
Yeah, so simply put, Vectorform is an invention company. So we invent digital products and experiences predominantly for the world's leading brands. And, you know, we go beyond just inventing digital products. We actually spin off and invent businesses as well. So we spun off three companies to date. Our most recent spinoff is actually a collaboration with Hometown DTE Energy, and it's a fantastic experience. We hear quite a bit about the Internet of Things, and really what DTE did is they took the concept of the Internet of Things and drove superior customer service with that. So for those of you who've seen the Insight program on TV, it's essentially a box that connects to your meter, and it shows the customer how much energy their home is using in real time. So it's amazing because DTE had the courage not only to deploy this technology broadly, but they're not only the first utility to do this, they're one of the first companies in the world to put an IoT device in consumers' hands to really drive customer engagement.
You know, so what started with as a program with DTE became a company, and now we sell that product, essentially the Insight platform, on a white label basis, which means other utilities co-brand it with their own name. And we have four other major utilities on the brand. The company is called Powerly, by the way.
I will tell you that I just absolutely love the app because I take it, I play with it, and I say, okay, I'm going to turn down the temperature in the house so the air conditioner turns on, right? And I'm watching the app, and as soon as the air conditioner turns on, I say, oh, look how much energy I'm using. Okay, what if I take and now use the microwave? Oh, look how much energy I'm using. Now if I take stuff off, right, and I stop using something, and I can, it's truly amazing.
Ed, can you imagine Carol, his wife, going nuts at this point? You know, please stop playing with the utilities.
We all drive our wives nuts occasionally with their various toys.
It's pretty amazing.
But knowledge is power, and it's that awareness. You know, it's being able to know exactly what is driving your utility bills. And that's the magic of it. Is previously it was a mystery. You know, what's using more power? Is it my lights? Is it that electric blanket? Is it my hot tub? I mean, what is driving up this bill? And now you can see exactly what's driving your bill. And that's why the program has been so successful. It's been, to date, as far as I know, it's the most successful energy optimization program ever rolled out to date.
Fantastic.
And the reason is because we're creating that awareness.
Yeah, when you drive real-time insight and then give people the ability to act on that. So we're really driving return on behavior there. And it's exciting to see that we're able to take emerging technology and see results so quickly within the marketplace. Usually, you know, you have emerging technology, you do these prototypes and you play around with it for years. But, you know, DTE really felt confident about this technology and they really saw how this could benefit customers and they rolled it out in record pace. And, you know, people talk about utilities being slow and it's awesome to see that ours is not.
Jason Pisano was speaking there along with Kurt Steckling. They are both with Vectorform. And just a little bit, we're going to introduce Christian Buckner in here as well. He's got another company he's working with. But guys, as I hear you talking, you sound like, where did you first meet? Where did you guys first get together?
We met in high school.
Was in the back of the classroom someplace saying, what if we did this? And what if we did that? Or, you know, were you guys driving the teacher nuts?
I mean, we always had a penchant for, you know, just changing things, trying new things, experimenting, and you know, it was a good opportunity. You know, we sat alphabetical order, Steckling, Visano, so we found ourselves, you know, sitting next to each other often and scheming and trying to figure out how to hack life, hack high school, and
Where was this, by the way? I'm just curious. Where was it?
Okay. Yeah, Brother Rice High School.
Brother Rice! Yeah. Your sworn enemy, Gary.
No, my son, who went to Catholic Central.
Yeah. That's okay.
It's a great school, too.
It's a good school. I'm sure there'll be opportunities for him.
So one of my... Yeah, he played lacrosse in high school, and one of my friends, and actually I'm helping him with his company right now, is the lacrosse coach from Brother Rice, Ajay Chawla.
Yeah, great guy.
So, yeah, he is a great guy. So and you, I'm helping him with his company, Group Quick.
Yeah.
I got to believe, Ed, that you would have been in the next person over on the row because you love to tinker like that and imagine what things would happen.
No, back then I just screwed off a lot.
I mean, well, not so to so say they were doing it.
Ajay's brother-in-law is actually the CEO of Powerly. He's a former McKinsey
principal
of Palo Alto.
Yeah.
So that's how we know Ajay.
So how did you move from that? I'm just
so I've heard the story, but you guys always wanted to start a company, but you had no idea what kind of company, right?
Yeah, you know, it's interesting because you have a passion for technology, but my father always said, listen, you can't make money with a hobby. You know, you really got to figure something out here. So one of the things we're like, you know, we get these amazing technologies and, you know, we talk about Microsoft and Apple, but we have clients will send us literally in the past these metal boxes that you have to plug in via USB. They authenticate and then you open up what's inside. And we have a piece of technology which is completely shrouded in plastic that we have to build experiences for years before they'll ever see the market. So we just have an amazing access to technology. The trick is how do we make money? How do we transform businesses leveraging this technology? And you know, we've done a decent job at that over the past 17 years.
Who ever got behind you guys to give you the money to do this?
We pretty much started the company with credit cards and personal funds.
Yeah, Amex, Visa, they were great.
Our first client, a very kind gentleman named Douglas Peterson. He's the owner of a company called Three Dimensional Services. They're a prototyping shop. They're a very big outfit. Mm-hmm. They've done a lot of really cool things. They were always an inspiration to me as a kid because they're on the manufacturing side, which I'm also interested in. I mean, I'm really interested in making anything and everything, and that's just another opportunity to create. But they do prototyping for all kinds of companies, industries, aerospace, automotive, furniture, farming. And they were our first client. And just by doing website development work and early marketing work, that's what got us into business and got us going.
Okay.
Yeah, our first clients were mentors. Our second client, Sun Valley Foods here in Detroit, Sophie Tatarian, she was a phenomenal mentor to us getting started. Really kind of showed us some basics and some of the lessons she taught us we use to this day.
She was also our landlord, so it's pretty cool.
I love it. I love it. The landlady pitched in as well. That is pretty fascinating. So their belief in you and then helping you and giving you tips and things, that kept that thing going because, you know, you weren't making widgets. You were imagining things to do with the widgets.
Yeah, we're building experiences and building stories. And the reality of the situation is that, you know, companies need to transform themselves to stay relevant. And you need to use technology to provide next-generation customer experience. And that's really what we're doing at Vectorform. So, you know, we're accelerating, you know, the way that large organizations think. We help them act like a startup. And, you know, it's a great time. And, you know, we love it.
All right. I want to find out if there was like a turning point for you in just a minute. Our guest who's been here speaking, Jason Fasano and Kurt Steckling, are the people at the head of Vectorform, which right now has a base in Royal Oak, but it also is an international company. You've got offices around the world. We're going to talk in just a minute with somebody who's just starting out, and that's Christian Buckner and his GroupKnit application. We'll bring him in just a moment here on the Internet Advisor. Welcome back. It's the Internet Advisor, and today we're, delving into a fascinating area. Gary, we talk about supporting tech businesses in Michigan, and second hour we're going to be talking with folks from TechSmith, for instance.
That's right.
We developed Camtasia and Snagit and some classic applications.
Yeah, it's like almost 20 years old, if you can believe it.
Exactly. Now, they began somewhere, and that's where we're going to kind of transition to right now, talking with somebody whose company is just beginning. Christian Buckner is with us. And Christian, you are the president, am I right?
Yeah.
Okay, president of GroupKnit, which is an application that I want you to describe to the old geezers that are here.
So GroupKnit is really focused on helping people in Detroit find great things to do. So we have like 4,000 different things to do, and that includes restaurants and bars, of course, but also all sorts of events, concerts, stand-up comedy, just about anything you can imagine that's in there. And the idea is that we want to be able to provide curated content in there so that we have what's the best thing to do, not just the entire universe of things
to
do.
So explain, when you say curated content, for the sake of our listeners, it means that it's been looked at, it's been vetted to a certain extent?
Exactly. So So we, of course, collect everything that there is, but we also want to vet, as you say, the best things to do and then put those right front and center. So we have a variety of lists that do that, and right on the front page of the app.
So how do you collect everything?
That's a good question. So this is an issue that a lot of people in our space run into, keeping the app up to date. We have developed a system, and I won't go into too much detail, but the idea is that we can collect data on events much, much more quickly than what you would expect from somebody doing it entirely manually. It's a system that can, you know, we can collect 100 events in an hour, and it'll, with, you know, thousands of rows of data very, very quickly.
Now, Kristen, you folks were incubated. Am I right in that sense? And meaning that there was somebody who was mentoring you at some point? Like the guys from Vectorform were talking about people along the way who mentored them. What happened with that incubator experience?
Sure. So we work with a company called Altair Engineering out of Troy. They're a very large engineering company there. They are really beneficial to have as supporters, both because they provide a lot of entrepreneurial experience. Of course, Jim Scapa out there and James Stagg and Sam, those guys are really, really helpful. In addition, they can provide a lot of architectural and software development type experience that makes our app, you know, so to speak, a Corvette under the hood, right? I mean, they bring with their software, some of the most advanced in the entire world, and so they bring that type of level of sophistication to our app as well.
And they really go out and cultivate innovation. I know that I spoke for their technology and innovation conference out in California a few years ago, and they scoured the world basically looking for great technology and developing it, either developing it from scratch or developing it further. And that's really what's kind of behind your app, right?
Mm-hmm. That's right, yeah. So we think that we fit that niche, definitely.
Guys, from Vectorform, what's the secret to getting a company? Because you've launched, you've incubated four companies, I believe.
Yep.
What is it? How do you get them out of the nest? How do you get them to get some traction, to get going someplace?
What's the secret sauce?
I don't know that there is a secret sauce. I mean, I think...
A lot of hard work, right?
Yeah, every situation is different. I think that you have to keep trying things. You have to... Okay. If you start to hit a wall, you just try something else. Don't keep going month after month and wondering why you don't have sales or why things aren't working and just not change anything. I mean, it's I think the only generic secret I could give is experimentation.
Absolutely. And we definitely believe in that. We do a lot of A/B testing. We really want to provide an experience that's really great for our users, and the only way to do that is by listening.
Yeah, so, exactly.
Uh-huh. Jason, you said something?
Yeah, you know, it's funny. In high school, you know, we had a teacher that would say, you know, the harder you work, the luckier you get. And I always remember hearing that. This sounds so ridiculous. There's no... you know, no parallel there. But the reality is that, yeah, hard work does, you know, ultimately strike. And, you know, it's, you know, the challenge is sometimes when do you double down or when do you abandon something? And that's...
Give up and try a different direction.
Yeah, that's something that, you know, we're still wrestling with, and I think we're getting a little bit better at. But, you know, our venture activities have been, you know, more formalized over the recent years. And it's been pretty exciting just watching some of the ideas come to fruition, watching how we're vetting them in a more mature and methodical fashion, but also not sort of processing them to a point where they lose sort of that special element.
Aha. Uh-huh. Yeah, they lose their spark.
Exactly.
And have, you know, your spark. You want them to have their spark.
Yeah. So the other thing, too, that you'll notice is that, you know, we're not only inventing, you know, digital products and experiences in business, you have to internally invent the leaders that are ultimately going to run these companies. So at Vectorform, we have a very entrepreneurial spirit that's pervasive throughout the entire company. And, you know, yeah, we may pull in a CFO or even a CEO from the outside, but at the CTO, the guy that is got the technology, is passionate about it, he's got to come from, or she's got to come from within. And, you know, it's interesting that without fail, if you try to bring in people that are going to run the technology part that didn't invent it, you know, it's very difficult. So we try to take, you know, the business burden off the inventor, the entrepreneur, to really... to help it take it to the next level.
Christian, how did you get involved in the process? I mean, how did you land here in this group knit? Was this your idea, first of all?
Yeah, this was definitely our idea. So Tim and I separately were living in different places. I was living in Palo Alto, actually, at the time. Tim was living in Chicago. And both of us were pretty dissatisfied with the amount of things to do near us, which sounds, you know, simplistic. But the idea is we wanted to be able to experience the cities that we were in a lot more easily and a lot more intuitively. And so we started to work on some ideas that were kind of around that concept. But what really solidified for us was the resurgence of Detroit and all the great things that are happening in Detroit. And so we really wanted...
Are you from here initially?
Yes, I grew up in West Bloomfield. So I would have grown in the city, but I grew up in the metro area.
Gotcha.
And so we went to West Bloomfield High School together, which is another you know, competitor of a lot of high schools that were mentioned today. Although when we were there, we were nowhere near as good at football, so it was never like.
Who is competition?
So we decided to come back here to Detroit because it's such an exciting place to be and such a great place, especially for an app like this where you're trying to find great things to do. There's so much great stuff.
Yeah, you left the Gold Coast to come here.
Exactly. And it's because of all the amazing development, all the amazing things to do. New restaurants open up every day, new bars open up, new concerts are coming out. You know, we have partnerships with a lot of different great businesses down in Detroit. And so that's really our goal, is to get people from the greater Metro Detroit area, downtown, down, experiencing the great things that are happening in the city.
Yeah.
Yeah, it is. Eddie, you going to say something?
I was going to say something that Gary's mentioned this many times, that you know, Ann Arbor's the wisdom and all knowledge and wisdom.
The center of all wisdom and knowledge. Okay, that's my line, okay.
And that so many people have left for the coasts, but then they find themselves coming back to Michigan because they miss the lifestyle. And you have a passion to bring these people back, as well.
Yeah, I've actually been involved in bringing a lot of kids that have graduated from here, gone somewhere else, and got them back, with the exception of my daughter.
I was going to say.
So, you know, it's taken
a couple of years. Give her time.
Yeah, that's awesome. We've had success even this year recruiting people back from the Valley. You know, we promise... you know, debt-free, less traffic, and unlimited showers. So it's
water your lawn without guilt.
Yeah,
I love it.
All kidding aside, though, I mean, we do draw a tremendous amount of people from other states, both coming back and even more recently, just people that are interested in coming to Detroit because they understand that it's having a tech resurgence and they hear there's a lot of great things about it. I mean, we have a NASA scientist that we pulled in.
Oh, wow.
Out of the Bay Area that came to join us.
Rocket scientist.
Literally a rocket
in charge
scientist.
Of launch.
You actually have your own rocket scientist.
Yeah, so she's our director of R&D, Ann Capusta, and she you know, came to Michigan in December. Okay, so this is someone that's committed. And, you know, she stuck it through the winter, and she's committed, so we're glad to have her.
You know, it's kind of interesting because some people come back because they grew up here and they, you know, want their kids to grow up with the Midwestern values.
Yeah.
But then there's so many people that are coming here because they see the reputation of Detroit being really gritty and where people make things, right?
Yeah. And that's true.
And they get here and they go, wow, this is different. It's technology as well as this maker fair atmosphere. And the two together are unstoppable.
Really. And that is, I think, where we're going as an area. And I mean, it's just, it's really neat to be able to travel and go to other places and say, wow, I hear Detroit's really having a resurgence, is really coming back. I'm hearing that a lot lately. I mean, we used to travel all over the world and just hear ridiculous things. I remember being in Mumbai and meeting someone, and I was like, what is up with that Kwame Kilpatrick guy?
Oh, yeah. I would say I'm from Detroit, and they'd say, I'm sorry, you know.
I'm in India, and these guys know who Kwame Kilpatrick is.
Oh, my Lord.
But, yeah, it is amazing that, you know, like Kurt said, when we first got started, we avoided the automobile industry the first 8 years we were in business.
Really?
And we were destined to, you know, try other things. So, you know, we set up offices in New York and Seattle and Munich and Hyderabad. And for us, it was, you know, we go to all these regions. And I wouldn't say that we would underplay Detroit, but, you know, whenever it came up, people were like, Detroit, why Detroit? You guys are working with all these brands. Why in Detroit? And for us, it's a little bit of a secret sauce, you know, because you have phenomenal design capability, phenomenal engineering. And the work ethic here is just unbelievable.
Yep.
Guys, we have run out of time, and it's driving me absolutely nuts because there's so much more I'd like to talk with you about. I want to thank, first of all, Christian Bruckner. Thank you for being with us, and best of luck to you.
Thanks for
with GroupKnit. Folks, it's Anna. If you go to internetadvisor.net, you will find links to that as well. And Jason and Kurt, thanks so much for opening up your world to us. Vectorform is the company, and again, you'll find out more about that at internetadvisor.net. In a moment, Mike is coming back. Time to get some news headlines under our belt, and that's with Mr. Mike Brennan. He was the editor of MI Tech News. And Mike, welcome to the program again.
Thanks, Foster.
First of all, we want to talk about some of the headlines that you've got this week in MI Tech News. One is very proud news for a bunch of students from Clinton High School.
Yes, they earned first place honors at this year's North American International Cyber Summit, where they had the High School's Cyber Challenge. And it's essentially one of those capture the flag kind of thing, red team, blue team. And it started off with 29 high schools and 282 students.
Wow.
And then got called down to 10 finalists that that appeared on the 17th at the summit. Mm-hmm. And of those 10, Clinton High School came out on top, followed by Airport High School in Carlton, and third place went to Cadillac High School up north.
That's really fantastic. Something I saw in there, which is kind of interesting and big news for hunters in Michigan, is that there's going to be something special coming from DNR.
Yeah, a new app called Am I Hunt, and what that allows you to do, use your smartphone, which most likely you would use because you wouldn't take a computer into the field, right? But it'll show you where all the various state game and wildlife areas are, what types of vegetation are out there, land topography, aerial photography, street maps, the whole nine yards. So you can make sure you're hunting on public land and not private, or you can run into some issues.
Or get yourself shot at.
That's what I was thinking, actually. Yeah, get yourself shot at. So,
but what a great resource for hunters. That's fantastic. That's cool. Am I Hunt? Now, Mike, I saw something in there that's about a new chapter you're opening up in MI Tech News called MI Realcast. Talk about that for our listeners.
Yeah, it's real as in R-E-E-L, as in a movie reel, although any movies anymore are shot digital. But the whole point being is there's a lot of really great video out there of products and services, not only in Michigan, not only in the Great Lakes of the United States, but around the world. So we're going to open this up and invite anybody with, well, it has to be in English, of course, but it has to be a video no more than 120 seconds long. You send that to us, we'll vet that, and if it looks good, we'll post it, and then we'll be able to share some of the really cool video of the products and services and tech that are going on around the world.
What a brilliant idea, and when will that be starting?
That started right away. We just launched it on Friday, so it's available now.
Oh, wonderful. Okay. And you can get at that through MI Tech News, right?
Yes, absolutely. There's a button there that says MI Realcast, and you click on it, and it'll show you the submission form. It'll show you how to upload your video. It goes to my Dropbox, essentially. And then we take a look at it, and the ones that we think are good, we'll post them.
I'd love it. So you get a chance to folks out there who maybe have a product or process that you like to show people. You get to brag about it and show people what it is. And then, Mike, you're stepping into the video age, and that's certainly where almost all kinds of news gathering agencies are going right now. Congratulations to you on that. Mike, we're going to introduce a friend of yours, and it's going to be giving a very important presentation coming up on November 17th. That's Mr. Rick Beckers, the president of CloudTech One, an IT managed services company. And they've got something very important coming up, and that is a presentation on November 17th that I think a lot of companies out there who look to keep up with what's going on in Industry 4.0 and the Internet of Things. Thank you very much for joining us here, along with Mike. Tell us a little bit about that presentation.
Sure. It's my pleasure. I'm the technology officer over at Automation Alley, along with my role here at CloudTech One. And so we have frequent seminars for our company. And what we've done here is kind of combine things. We're bringing in the president of Memex, David McPhail. Mm-hmm. And Memex is a company that provides hardware and software solutions for IIoT.
I've heard of IoT, the Internet of Things. What is IIoT?
It is the Industrial Internet of Things.
Ha.
I met him at the International Manufacturing Technology Show in Chicago recently. And when I asked him to, he's coming in to co-speak with me, if you will, mm-hmm. on the topic of Industry 4.0 and IIoT. So what we're hoping to do, not hoping, we know we're going to do, is be able to have an open and interactive discussion with local manufacturers who are looking to do the connectivity thing from mm-hmm. the shop floor to the top floor so that they can see what's going on in the back room right from their desktops and get dynamic information and not have to wait forever. And it just makes them more productive. And
it's not to kind of playing catch-up ball, but you really are taking a march ahead in getting these companies to connect, as you said, the shop floor with the top floor.
Exactly. So that was the search. We've been looking around for a while. I'm tasked with this same type of thing in my role at Automation Alley, in that we are looking for the luminaries in IIoT, mm-hmm. you know, to bring them together to write a long-term report on how Industry 4.0 and IIoT is going to affect, and not only affect, but give us the opportunity to stamp Southeast Michigan again with a name not unlike Motor City, right? Mm-hmm. IIoT mm-hmm. is there for us to grab, I think. Mm-hmm. We have the technology people. We have the manufacturing. We have all of the things, the components. And so I'm really fired up about the opportunity to start to bring this clarity, if you will.
Now, that's going to happen November 17th. That's going to happen at Automation Alley. Am I right?
That's correct.
Okay,
it starts at 11 o'clock.
Where can people go online to get more information about this? Since we're running short on time ourselves right now, where can they go online to get more details?
Two places. You can go to my website at cloudtech1, that's the number one, .com, or you can go to the Automation Alley website and register at either location. We're going to feed you on that day, and basically it's an 11 a.m. to 2 p.m. time.
Excellent. Rick, thank you so much for being with us here on the Internet Advisor and for chiming in along with Mike and his MI Tech News.
All right. Well, thanks for the opportunity. I appreciate it.
That's Mr. Rick Beckers, and looks like it's interesting how all these things are tying together. The industrial Internet of Things he was talking about there, we've been talking about some of those different things that are tying together some new applications and ways of looking at the world around us. And one of those ways, as a matter of fact, we talked before with Christian Bruckner from GroupNet, is to help people to find where things are happening in the Motor City and in Ann Arbor, as I understand,
yep,
as well.
Absolutely, Ann Arbor and the Motor City.
Oh, it sounds like a hoot. Now, where are you in the process of launching this?
So we launched our iOS app in August, and we launched our Android app just about 3 weeks ago.
Okay, how's it going right now?
Beautiful.
How's it going?
Those are
Thanks.
Beautiful apps.
Yeah, it's going really well. Our users are growing quickly, and they're increasing at an increasing rate, which is what we like to see. So we're really excited about it, and you know, we're getting pretty good at getting things in there, keeping it up to date. So
now, who's this for?
Right along.
Will geezers like Eddie, be able to? Will we find things to enjoy as well?
Well, I wouldn't call anybody a geezer, but I think that it is definitely most valuable for people who are really excited about going out into the city. I think that millennials are really the target demographic.
Yeah, I was going to say.
That said, there's a lot of stuff to do in there.
Oh, yeah.
Just about anybody will find great things to do. I mean, one of the things I'm most excited about downtown is the great art scene that's emerging. And so there's a lot of great things you can see and visit. And one of the places I always talk about is the Belt and the Z Lot, which is a parking structure and a couple of bars. And basically, they took this parking structure and they took each one of the different floors of the parking structure, brought it an artist. The artist painted the entire floor.
No kidding.
So that, you know, something as mundane as a parking structure can then become a little bit more beautiful and a little bit more enjoyable.
It.
Right. Even the architecture of this parking structure is very cool. So it's awesome. Mm-hmm. It's an awesome way to experience downtown.
Yeah. Now, I have a question now. Does your application have the ability to search?
Yeah, absolutely.
Excellent.
Yeah, absolutely.
And what about like coupons, like a Groupon type of thing? Is that something you're going to be incorporating in the near future?
I'm glad you asked that, because that is our next thing, is to offer coupons.
It seems logical.
Exclusive deals from businesses to our users, yeah.
Oh, yeah. It makes perfect sense. Christian, the very best to you. Christian Bruckner with us, president of GroupNet. Excuse me. You'll find that if you go to InternetAdvisor.net. It's groupnet.com, but you can also find a live link there that'll take you to this. And Gary says it's a beautiful site.
That's
among
right.
Other things.
Or go to the stores to get your apps.
Yeah,
download the app.
There you go. Either your Android app or your iOS app. Christian, the best to you.
Yep,
Thank you so much for being with us. And by the way, we're going to continue with this theme of new applications. As a matter of fact, we have somebody coming in the second hour who is this very day going to be launching an application to help people who are challenged by allergies. Very an edible app. How you like that? All that coming up, and try to explain a DDoS attack.
You're listening to a podcast of the Internet Advisor Show. To see the show notes for this program, visit our homepage, theinternetadvisor.net. You'll discover past podcasts, our free toolkit with software to clean up your computer and keep it running strong, and many other resources. You'll also find links to mitechnews.com, our co-sponsored weekly tech and entrepreneur newsletter, edited by Mike Brennan. If you have a question for our hosts, just click the contact button on the homepage and send us an email with the details. And don't forget to look for us on Facebook and Twitter, and at Detroit's newest podcast network, podcastdetroit.com. Now, let's get back to the second hour of the Internet Advisor.
Hello and welcome to hour number two of the Internet Advisor. I'm Foster Brown, co-host and producer of the program. And with me, Mr. Gary Baker and Ed Rudell, my partners in studio. We have another great hour lined up for us. Doug Copley is going to be in here. We're going to be talking with him about security and, in particular, trying to get some idea of what happened with the Internet, the huge attack that occurred just recently, and some of the ways we can protect ourselves. And we're going to have a couple of struggling young entrepreneurs in here on the day they're launching their new app. Thank you again, as I said, for the second hour being with us here. Mike Parsons, thank you so much as our engineer and producer during the program here. Unsung heroes, those folks behind the glass. We're glad to have him with us to help us beyond the year with you. Well, in our second hour, we're going to continue, Gary, with that theme that we began in the first part, which was to look at part of our, if you will, our role has been over the years to both help people with Ed here, handing out good advice to people as they've called in with their questions, but also to help to promote businesses in the state of Michigan.
Yep, good businesses that have technology that will benefit all of us, and our job is to help get that technology promoted out through the radio and tell people to go online and look at the app or at the device that we sometimes promote. And we've got another one.
I know, we got another one here. And it's exciting to me. There's more and more of these applications that are coming up that we can talk about. Let's just quickly get to introducing people who are in the studio with us. Mike Copley is with us, along with his partner, Ish Baid. And they are the co-developers of a brand new application. And you folks, Ish, do you want to tell us what that application is?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, it was Michael's idea, actually. So Michael here has a dairy allergy. And so we'd go out of restaurants and we'd sit down and we'd try to find something to eat. And Mike actually, you know, would spend, you know, 10, 15, 20 minutes deciding what he can eat. You know, even if it has the tiniest amount of dairy, he'd have to go to the hospital.
Exactly. Oh, really? But that badly, Mike? Yeah. You were that brittle?
Exactly, yeah. Wow. So a lot of the time, like, I was asking restaurants, I would have them run back to the kitchen, check ingredient lists, and that was just a huge hassle. So
process
a lot
took
times,
a long time.
Yeah.
That was the main pain point.
And sometimes you have to go to a restaurant that even has, an entree that you can eat. And sometimes they're not. So you have to find the right restaurant, too, not only the right menu item.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. And I think we run into that a lot with, like, people we talked about with vegetarian or vegan diets a lot of times, or like even gluten-free, they'll say like, oh, the only thing we can offer you is a salad. Well, I'm sure those people with those restrictions are sick of having salads.
Yes, exactly.
Nice to try and provide them with options outside.
And it could be very serious. I had an aunt who had an allergy to Brazil nuts and became violently ill one time because a knife that had been used in preparation of a completely different sandwich had been used to cut or had touched a Brazil nut, and she went into anaphylactic shock. I mean, it's not something to be teased about. So necessity is the mother of invention, and you've come up with an application then to deal with this, I understand.
Exactly.
And it's launching today.
It is.
Yeah. Woo-hoo.
It is. We are the main sponsor of the Big Sean concert at the University of Michigan this weekend. That's in Ann Arbor, and we'll be telling people about the apps and getting our word out there. We're releasing on Android this weekend and iOS, and the web app will be coming within a month or so.
Okay. And it's called?
The app is called Edible.
And so they can go to the Android store and download Edible and get your app.
Yeah. Exactly. And if you would like to just learn more about the project itself or the application, edibleproject.io is the website as well.
Okay. And we just heard about this, folks, so I haven't got that on the website yet. So that's edibleproject.io. And if they go to that, then they can find out more about the project.
And when I found out about it, Doug Copley and I have worked together, and he's going to be our guest in a little bit. And he said, hey, will you meet with my son? He's there at Michigan. And I said, of course, there's a security conference that I was going to go to. So Mike came in after the conference at the Rackham School. And that was when I first found out about it on Thursday night this week. Mm. But it's interesting because we said, hey, Christian is coming in with, and we're going to be announcing his product, which we did last hour.
Yeah. Yep.
We said, hey, why don't we introduce the two of you? And guess what? You can do that on Saturday. And they said, we're launching the app, but it's worth coming in. So maybe we've helped create a liaison, maybe even a partnership between the two budding entrepreneurial companies.
I love it. Is the app something, when you have it on your phone, how do you use it? How are you going to be using it?
So, actually, Ish, do you want to take this one?
Yeah, absolutely. So the app's like very simple. We didn't try to do too much. The goal was to really make it easier for people with dietary restrictions to find what they can eat around them. So you launch the app. you have a list of 11 possible allergens that you're allergic to or possible diets that you follow, vegan, vegetarian, gluten-free, and then you're immediately presented with a list of items, given your dietary restrictions, of food items you can actually eat and what people think about them.
Oh, I see. Okay, very good. Where do you gather your data from then? Is it from restaurants?
Yeah, so we've done a little bit of partnerships with restaurants in the past, but the new app that we've just launched today really relies on user-submitted data. So users who have been vegan, they've been following a gluten-free diet for years, they're the expert in dishes of that sort, they're submitting items, and then people can go in and say, yeah, I love this. This is something that's gluten-free. This is exactly what I'm looking for.
So the user, I love that.
Yeah, right. I could see this app just going nuts in the near future with enhancements. I mean, I see in the near future, you could have location-based tracking where it'll basically, based on your dietary restrictions, future-based because it doesn't have it now.
Exactly.
But you guys have probably thought about this. Mm-hmm. Based on your location, you could find restaurants in your area that make tailored to your dietary restrictions, or you can get recommendations. There could be, this is phenomenal. I mean, this could grow hugely. The ability for people with dietary restrictions to also provide feedback about restaurants. This is going to be huge.
Yeah, almost a Yelp-like kind of thing.
Yeah.
Where you can combine this. Well, the very best you now, you've got to run because you've got a presentation to make of this app.
We do.
I want to thank you very much for being here, Mike Comley and Ish Bade, who are the partners in this new application called Edible. Again, if you'd like to find out more about it, you can go to edibleproject.io, and as you go on by, give me some information so I can post it, and we'll follow this up as well. Okay?
All right, that sounds great.
Yeah.
Coming back in just a minute, we'll be talking to Dad. Well, in kind of an interesting way, we heard from one generation of the family. Now, Dad is going to step in. I'm teasing a little bit here. Doug Copley is with us. He is the deputy CISO, and you're responsible for security and privacy strategist at Forcepoint. Am I right? Did I get all that title correct then?
That's correct. I'm Deputy CISO, and I also do privacy and security strategy.
Okay.
Doug and I first met. He was the CISO, the Chief Information Security Officer at Beaumont Health. Then when he left, he took this kind of industry, I don't know, guru advocacy.
Thought leader is what they like to call it.
Thought leader, I like that. Yeah.
I like guru better.
For my
it's
thoughts.
A guru, yeah.
Oh, you said thought. I thought you said cult. Okay, I'm sorry.
Well, the reason we're teasing around here, because initially we had thought about having you in here to talk about internet security, et cetera, and we are going to do that. Matter of fact, Doug has given us a wonderful list of things to do to protect your PC and then also using the internet safely. But since then, it just yesterday, within the last 24, 48 hours, there was a massive attack on the internet that brought down some huge sites and seemed to be on a factor of, I don't know, one or two more bigger than anything that's going on before. Or am I wrong, Doug? Is this kind of like normal?
No, it's definitely not normal. And I think you got the first viewpoint a few weeks back when Brian Krebs, who's an investigator reporter, when his site got hit.
Yeah.
And so that really was the first introduction of a massive attack using Internet of Things devices, your security cameras, your refrigerators, your thermostats in your house.
Yeah, it's not just botnets created by people who have not secured their PCs.
Well, no. It's because people have not secured their security camera and their other Internet of Things devices that are connected to the internet. And so many times people they connect them and they don't
read the manual.
They don't read the manual. They don't change.
Well,
it's easy, but they don't change the default password. So everybody goes in and says, I can break into this device really easily. Mm-hmm. I use the default password.
No.
They break in and then they create, and they turn this into a bot.
No, it's the manufacturers that release the devices. I mean, if you remember when wireless routers were first delivered, the same thing happened. No one changed the administrative passwords on them. Now, when you buy one, the first time you attach, it forces you to change those passwords.
Yeah,
we're going through a learning curve.
So we need that for the other devices.
We need these for the other devices.
Exactly.
They didn't include security in them, for you know, for a consumer device.
Who cares if somebody hacks into my thermostat? Okay, they make it a little hotter, a little colder in my home.
Well, that's
right?
what they were thinking.
And but. In fact, it's not that way, Doug, right? I mean, well, they use these devices.
Yeah, and I'm thinking, you know, since I was at Beaumont Health, right, as were you for a little while, you know, you think about changing the temperature of your home, no big deal. Talk about changing the thermostat in a blood bank.
Oh,
and you raise the temperature, then the blood's no good anymore, and
yeah.
that, you know, yeah. that all has to be thrown away.
Or,
so,
or decide to disable a heart monitor,
right? And right? and you think about the security cameras or security alarm systems, and
you know, guys, you know, one of the
there's all kinds of potential.
I'd be interested
impacts.
To hear your opinion on this, Doug. One of the things that reads. I frankly scared me was reading one of the commentaries about this, and they said that this is just kind of like probing. Despite how massive the attack was, it's just probing, because they said the last time they came through, they came in at one level and then left at another. But when they came back, they didn't go back to the start again. They went back to the level that they were at in terms of the sites that they were destroying, et cetera. That scares me that this was just a probe.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, but that when you're talking about like they're just pinging, or when they get into the devices.
Whoever
themselves?
Is doing this,
well,
trying to see how much damage can be done.
Yes.
And they've seen that I can do this much. Let's see how much more I
well,
can do.
Well, in this particular case that you're talking about, it hit so many large sites because they were all using the same ISP. They went after the ISP.
Right.
Right? They didn't go after the sites. Normally, they go after the sites.
With well, that's
Brian,
just
with
it.
With Krebs Security, they went after Krebs Security.
Right.
They didn't go after his ISP. If they had gone after his ISP and shut it down, then it would have been everybody.
But isn't this even
ISP.
Scarier, though, that they've now, instead of focusing on a single individual or on a single ISP, they've now gone after for this DNY, I think. Can anybody explain to me what that or what
they
that,
were a DNS provider?
That was the ISP.
Oh, that was the ISP.
Yeah,
okay.
Dyn is the ISP. And but the point is that there are all sorts of tools. I sent you a list today, the top 10 tools, but there are all sorts of tools that an ISP could use to stop these attacks. Shame on them if they don't do it. Because we're not going to stop the bad guys from all over the world.
And
we're not going to stop
even,
the bad guys.
You even
gotta,
more important,
we got to stop it.
Yeah, and, to leverage these tools, because Foster, as you said, you know, the criminals, just like kids or athletes as they develop, right? They're just trying to understand what their capabilities are.
Exactly.
So they're testing the waters.
But it sounds like, Ed, what you were saying before, that the burden really goes to the manufacturers, for instance, of these IoT, the Internet of Things devices. If when they, by default, shut down the, whatever, the modems, you know, they give them a password and you got to, by default, get rid of it. The same thing seems to apply in this to the ISPs, Gary. That's what you seem to say.
So the ISPs, they can, first of all, they can take in and stop a DDoS attack. Now, you know, you have to have a service that does that. The service has to be bigger than the attack itself. Our biggest problem with this is that with the Internet of Things, there's so many different bots out there that it's really hard. So the DDoS attacks are much larger than they've been before. So it takes even more capability. And that, I think, is the concern here in this particular
Yeah, and, the, and one article I was reading was saying that there, shoot, I forget the name of the botnet, but they identified a botnet that was being used for this. And they said that what made it so massive was that it was including not just PCs or compromised computers.
It was the Marais, I think, was it referring to.
Yes.
But that's a tool. That is a software development tool used to exploit the Internet of Thing devices is what my understanding was.
So I guess the bottom line, what can we do? Do we go after the manufacturer, put pressure on them, on the ISPs?
Everybody.
You know,
So if I take as a consumer and say, you know what, I don't care if somebody hacks into my thermostat, right?
Yeah.
That's not that big a deal. Who cares? My electric lights that are connected to the Internet so I can turn them on and off with my app. Who cares if they turn them on while I'm not there? You know, it matters. You're not going to be a good corporate cyber citizen if you do not take and secure your devices. And I think an ISP is responsible not only for dealing with the attacks that come in to your ISP,
oh, I got you. Okay.
but people that have attacks going out.
Mm.
you know, I'm connected to Comcast. Comcast should look at my traffic and say, and it's very easy with algorithms today, this ping is going to the same place, and there are hundreds of thousands of these pings over the last hour. Stop that.
Yep, shut that. Right? You mm-hmm. shut that.
They can shut you down at that
point. That's not a consumer's use. Yeah. That's a bot.
Yep.
So what else can we do as consumers, Doug?
So, I mean, we like to say in the industry, you know, and I preach this in the companies that I work for, right? Security is everybody's business. So it's not just the manufacturers, and you know, but they need to secure the devices. The individuals using them have to do what they can to secure the devices. But in terms of the general consumer, right, sitting at home with their internet router and their PCs, I mean, you know, I provided a list, and we can put it on your website, some basics, you know, you don't want to, I mean, you need to back up your PC and back it up to removable drives. You don't want the drives connected, because you get a piece of malware like ransomware, and it's going to infect anything that's connected. So it's important when you do a backup that you keep that offline.
Okay, do the backup and then keep it offline.
Yeah, just unplug
Absolutely.
It.
Absolutely.
Yep. Okay. How about if it's in the cloud? Will that be sufficient?
In generally speaking, I would say yes. There are some good solid providers out there. The risk you run is if it's a service that's constantly connected, there's a potential that the malware could navigate itself there as well.
And they have ways
now
to
I'm
deal
worried.
With that.
I thought I was safe.
Doug, we're going to have you back because we just. You know, you've got so much to say, and we just touched the surface of it.
Well, I tell you what, when you come back, let's talk about a few more things, because we have some folks coming in from TechSmith. Thank you for being with us here on the Internet Advisor. By the way, Doug Copley has been in studio with us. He's a security expert with Forcepoint. And Doug, you gave us a list of things that we are going to be publishing as well on our homepage. We don't have it there yet, folks, but we will after the program. It's about protecting your PC and then using the Internet safely. So I want to let folks know we are going to be posting these things, and we can talk maybe a little bit. Well, maybe before we finish the program out, we get a chance to talk a little bit more about that, okay? Thank you very much for providing that with us. Gary, I forget how many years ago it has been, but you and I interviewed some of the folks from TechSmith way back in the dawn of time of our show.
That's right. Bill Hamilton, right. who started TechSmith, he had Snagit initially, and we had him on, along with a couple people that had worked for him at the time. And then they introduced and Snagit is well-used, well-known in the industry. They introduced another product called Camtasia, which is, we're going to hear a little bit more about it, but it's video-oriented. And so then we had him back on, and then somehow we lost sight of TechSmith, right? They were always out there, but we didn't have them back on for a good 15 years.
Yes, I know. It's been a long time.
So we're changing that today.
And we're getting that corrected today. I'd like to welcome to our show Wendy Hamilton, who is the current CEO at TechSmith. Wendy, welcome to the program.
Thank you. I'm happy to be here.
Good to have you with us. And also with us is Troy Stein, who I have listed down here as the General Manager Camtasia. Now, is that General Manager of the whole thing or just of the Camtasia project?
Of the Camtasia project.
All right. Well, first of all, welcome back to the show. We're so delighted to have you with us. Is this like a new generation of TechSmith that we're tapping into right now?
It is. It sounds like you talked to my father 15 years ago. But yeah, he's somewhat retired. He's the chairman of the board now.
Uh-huh.
And I'm the CEO and have the execution responsibility. And I've been in place as CEO a little bit over 6 months.
Oh, congratulations to you. That's wonderful. So it's remaining a family business in that sense then, huh?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
What was your background in technology, other than being, you know, at your father's knee, I guess, learning it?
Sure. I've had quite a long background. I grew up in consulting, working for Accenture, doing systems integration consulting and advanced technology, including imaging and media, for about 8 years. Then I went to a technology startup that was an Adobe Venture startup. We did an IPO, and then we got acquired a couple times, which was also in the content publishing space. And then I got acquired, and I found myself going from this tiny venture startup to working for a large $15 billion company, Thomson Reuters, and I grew through the ranks there, and I ran their life sciences practice there for a while. And they're a content publisher, so we had technology products in the cloud for primarily pharma companies.
What was it like coming home, if you will, to TechSmith?
A little bit of a shock. I never quite planned it, actually. You know, it's funny as you... you think what you want is to get more senior, and then when you're there, it's not what you expected. I really miss being closer to the customer, closer to the product strategy, and being able to lead with values that are more maybe Michigan or Midwest, I guess. So I'm really happy to come back.
That's interesting that you mentioned the value issue, because, Gary, we were bringing it up before. We've had a couple of, matter of fact, we've had a number of businesses in here. One was Vectorform, based in Royal Oak, and then we had just a brand new startup called GroupKnit. And then, as a matter of fact, two young men who are launching an application today in Ann Arbor called Edible were in studio with us at the very start. So we've been talking with people from all different kinds of stages. But one of the things, Gary, you mentioned was the whole notion of, and you have just confirmed it, Wendy, again, the business of coming back to some sort of special values here in the Midwest. What are those values that you're coming back to?
Well, I guess the easiest way to say it is I don't think any decision's ever been made at TechSmith that was simply about making a quick buck, you know, especially about making a quick buck at the expense of anything else. TechSmith, my dad was always quite clear that, you know, his purpose for founding the company was to treat customers well and make their lives amazing and surprise them and delight them. And he believed that doing so would give you the financial freedom and flexibility to treat your employees really well, too. And that's where I want to be.
Oh, that's wonderful. Good, isn't that neat to hear?
Good Midwestern values.
Right? I love it. Yeah, give them whatever label you want. I like those values.
Yeah. Hey, and you've got, I guess the first time under under your leadership, you've got some updates to those signature products, right? Can you talk to us a little bit about the products?
Sure, I'd love to. Would it be okay first? I gave just a little bit of background on the company.
Oh, please. Yes.
Sure. So TechSmith makes software products that help create video, as you said, and other kinds of video, visual communication, like animated GIFs and screen recording and marked up screenshots. Mm-hmm. And as you've referenced, we've been around over 25 years. Our two major products are Snagit and Camtasia. Those are the two most well-known and are approaching probably 30 million users in 160 countries. Yeah, and this has been an exciting year for us because we've actually done two major releases to both those products in a single year, and that's actually never been done before, at least not in many years. So it's been quite a lot, and we're quite excited about it.
Fantastic, fantastic. And Troy, you're in charge of Camtasia. That's a name that's been, Ed, you mentioned it before, that's a name that's been around for a long time.
Yes.
And what is it, for folks who may not know what Camtasia is, tell them a little bit about what it is and what it does.
Camtasia is a video editing application. It allows you to create videos for business purposes. So it's really focused on helping a professional make videos without having to be a video professional, so to speak.
I love that snag, that line. That's great.
Well, and the reality is that a lot of the folks that are probably listening are somewhat technical, right? Mm-hmm. These are the people who get called on by their moms and their aunts and their neighbors to fix their computers, and often even at the office where, you know, at the water cooler, somebody comes to them and says, hey, this database, how do I do this, that, or the other thing? And these are the technical people that if they could, or if they didn't do something, they would be answered questions day after day after day, and they may never get their job done. So what Camtasia does is not only does it allow them to make the videos, but it does it in a very special way. It allows you to record your computer. So if your knowledge happens to be somewhat computer-based, whether it's about a website, an application, or you simply need to turn on the webcam on your computer, Camtasia records all that and allows you to make a really richly produced video in a matter of minutes or hours as opposed to days and weeks and months.
Well, that is wonderful. Matter of fact, it's kind of interesting. Mike Brennan, who does MI Tech News, has just launched a new service with his called MI Realcast. And the idea is that people will be able to take, for instance, Camtasia and produce some videos about an industrial product or about a process and then submit that. So this Camtasia fits perfectly in that kind of a world.
Yeah, I had a call with a gal on Thursday, and she was very, very laudatory, very complimentary about Camtasia, and in fact, it was more than we were used to. It was a little bit over the top, and I said, I got to understand why this is. And she said, because I've been able to make $500,000 using your software.
That's a good reason.
Okay, now you got my interest. Tell me more. And she happened to be a gal that had very specific technical expertise in an area. She happened to be the first one to market with a course, and she was able to record her PowerPoint presentations and create a course that she was able to put online in like Udemy and these other online course sites.
I love it.
And have people come, and her knowledge became money. But she was not a video professional. She just happened to be a professional who had expertise.
You know, we're running out of time here, but I want to find out from both you and Wendy, how is it, you've been out there that long, these companies normally are gobbled up, the software is incorporated. How do you manage to stay independent and so successful?
Well, I guess those values work. So we've been very financially healthy. The company was actually always self-funded. We've never taken any outside investment. Wow. So that's one reason we never needed to exit. Mm-hmm. And I think it also comes back maybe a little bit to those values. I mean, I don't want to speak for my dad, but my sense is that, sure, we've gotten acquisition offers, but you always worry what will happen to the people of the company after you do something like that.
Yeah.
So, you know, that just wasn't a need and it wasn't a preference.
I love that attitude. You know, I'm sorry, we've just kind of quickly run out of time here, but I want to thank Wendy Hamilton, the new CEO at TechSmith, and Troy Stein, who is the general manager of the Camtasia Project, for being with us. We're going to have you folks back again, but thanks so much for being with us here now. I'd like once again to tip my hat to Mike Parsons, who has been doing a great job of not only engineering the program, but also of being our producer as well. Thank you so much, Mike. A man of many talents and great service he's been doing for many years. We're going to return to a guest who was with us before, and matter of fact has been continued to be with us, Doug Copley. He's the deputy CISO, and that is the Chief Information Security Officer in charge of security and privacy. And you're at ForcePoint, right? That's the company that you're
at? That's correct. And we're a security software company based out of Austin, Texas.
I understand that you, speaking about our last guest, from the folks from TechSmith, that you use one of their tools in telling people how to use the software.
We do. So, you know, for our software products, we often will put recordings up on YouTube that explain to people how to get, you know, how to take the most advantage of our software, and we use that Camtasia product to do those.
That's brilliant. Ed was the one who converted me to this. It's so simple-minded. I should have gotten it quickly then.
And I forgot where they're based. They're based out of, is it Grand Rapids or?
No.
Lansing, that's what it was.
Yeah, Okemos.
Yes.
Okemos,
yeah.
That's right. But you had talked to me before about it, and it's so true because I learned visually.
Yes.
That's been a huge help to me ever since I've gone to YouTube.
And that's how Camtasia works. You have an idea of how you want things to lay it out, and you would just grab portions of video, and you could just move them around. I mean, for a layman, Troy was saying, I don't know how to do it, but, you know.
You're not a video editor.
I'm not a video editor.
Right. But this allowed you to be able to do that. So, and you would create then videos to help people use the security software. Now, I want to pose.
And it's a very extensive tool set, ForcePoint. And it was called WebSense. It was purchased by Raytheon and now called ForcePoint. And Lots of big companies use it, but some smaller companies use it as well. It's a very extensive tool set that is so feature-rich that you do need some of those YouTube videos to make it really easy to install and use, right?
Yeah, we absolutely do. Like you said, we do have a pretty extensive offering in terms of security software. We sell to big, small, medium-sized enterprises. And
all right, I want to see if we can point the finger back at the users now, all right? Folks, you may start to squirm when we ask this question, but I'm interested in this. Should ISPs shut down individual customers whose connections, after they've determined this, are being used to be part of a botnet?
So I can see both sides of this question. You know, certainly as an ISP, you know, I see a botnet coming through and I see traffic coming from Internet of Things devices. Mm-hmm. Of course, I'm going to want to shut them down, right? I don't want to degrade the service.
Because it hurts everybody else.
Yes.
Right. It hurts everybody using the ISP, which is like what happened recently.
Right.
So, but on the flip side of that, coming out of healthcare, I can see potential liability there.
How so?
In terms of, okay, they determine that they're seeing all kinds of this traffic coming from Internet of Things devices. So they stop all the traffic going through them from that device. Let's say it's a security camera. I could see somebody coming to them and saying, well, you know, during this time, somebody broke into my house and injured somebody, and we never knew about it because you shut down my security camera. Issue.
But well, how about
what they would do is shut down the whole connection, right?
Yeah, they would shut down the whole connection to the house. Yeah.
You don't have any connectivity at all. And I liken it to the real world. Right. And I posed this in email earlier today to all of you. I said, you know, is this like drivers who drive without a muffler and pull up next to you at a stoplight, long stoplight? Right. And of course, if they do that, it's going to be a really long stoplight. Right.
It's not just irritated by that.
Yeah, is it like neighbors who don't cut their grass, let it overgrown or pile junk in the front yard? Mm. There's, you know, ordinances against that. Is it like someone who talks loudly in a crowded theater during a show?
Is it merely rude or don't tell me what I can do or I should have to do?
Or irresponsible or whatever.
Irresponsible.
But if your freedom to do whatever you want impinges on somebody else's freedom, right, is it good sense and in many cases laws or ordinances that say, no, you can't do that.
But how about some of the grandma and grandpas who don't really get it yet? I mean, how many times have you come back
to this? If your internet connection goes down, they get a message just before it goes down, the last one they get, which says you can put it back up as soon as, and then 3 hours later, it comes back online, or even an hour later, it comes back online. And it goes down again because your camera's still spewing, all this DOS.
But they would have to give them some background on this is why it's happening. Your camera, for instance, has been taken over.
They can't send them an email because their email's down.
Yeah, but you could do that before you shut it down.
They could send them a text message on the cell phone.
Well, but I mean before you shut them down.
Yeah.
But I mean,
at some point, you just have to fix it, right? You have to go buy a new muffler. You have to stop piling junk in your yard. Right.
The camera on my MacBook Pro?
I'm never going to buy that manufacturer's camera.
It's the camera that's embedded in my computer.
Yeah, disconnect it.
Put a piece of tape over it. I don't know.
Just disconnect it.
I have a piece of tape.
You know, you just disabled the camera. Sorry.
Yeah, but we're not talking about the cameras embedded in your computer. We're talking about the standalone security camera.
Oh, the standalone security
camera. Baby monitors.
I go back to a point that we made earlier, in which case, you know, hey, I have the security camera that I have no ability to change the configuration of.
There you go.
Right? At that point, the user of it is helpless to try and fix it.
Don't buy that camera ever again. Right?
Yeah,
go buy somebody,
that may be the answer.
Go buy a camera from a reputable company.
But what should I have to? Should I be able to take it back to the manufacturer and say, take this camera back because it is vulnerable and I can't change the darn thing? Or give me a, what do they call that when they send you a...
I'm sorry, Foster, you only have 30 days return policy on that.
You know, and so is this a short-term fix or a long-term fix? There has to be warning, you know, blah, blah, blah. And people are going to have to act responsible.
When they get shut down, they will start acting quickly. That's
right.
For sure.
And that's the consequences of not being a good cyber citizen, not acting responsibly.
But
not,
I see. I don't think they even know that.
Well, well, but they will.
Well, I was going to say, I think the tools that the ISPs use to block DDoS, you know, they should continue to evolve just like everything else. And so they may be able to more refinely say, no, coming from this address, but specifically going to this one, stop it, but allow it to communicate other places.
And they can't.
So.
So it may be, is it a matter then of kind of a certain laziness on the part of the ISPs that's saying, I'm not going to do that, but boy, the cost is getting higher and higher if you look at what happened this week.
Yeah, so the article that, you know, we sent around this morning says exactly that. ISPs sometimes are a little lazy and need to, you know, and need to implement certain algorithms that they need. And there's good tool sets out there. Right? You just have to install
Doug,
them.
Doug, you guys would know.
Right?
Yeah. There are tool sets out there to help them, huh?
Right.
There absolutely are. And, you know, you just have to be diligent in picking the right service provider.
Okay, so one thing we're saying is that
That's another thing. Pick a better service provider
good.
That does this.
All right. So the consumer has a responsibility to whatever extent he or she knows, secure your devices, right? Ed, you got that frustrated.
Well, because he just said you get to choose who your internet provider is, and they're all buying each other up. You got Time Warner's now going to be purchased by AT&T.
I was thinking the same thing.
And,
yeah, but the big ones do this. It's a smaller one. So nobody's going to use DIN anymore unless they fix it, because DIN took down Twitter and Spotify and a bunch of other companies that were using DIN.
Oh. Ed's
Don't
got
use
a
DIN
lot
anymore until they fix what they offer.
By the way, in our toolkit, Ed has got a lot of resources to help you be safe and a good cyber citizen with malware protection and a whole bunch of other things, right? Go to internetadvisor.net and the toolkit there. Ed's got a lot of stuff there, and we'll do our best to post even more. Speaking of posting, Doug will put your list up about protecting your PC and using the internet safely so that people can get to that. Doug Copley, thank you so much for being with us. It is a conversation
Doug, for coming in.
That thank will not end
me.
Quickly.
Enlightening, boy.
Guys, thank you so much for being in here, Gary and Ed. And folks, thank you for being with us. We will see you again this coming week from 4 until 6 here on the Internet Advisor.
You've been listening to the Internet Advisor Show, Detroit's longest-running, locally produced computer show, with Foster Brown, Gary Baker, and our team of experts. For more information about our weekly show, to ask a question of our experts, or find the show notes for this podcast, visit InternetAdvisor.net and look for us on Facebook and Twitter. Don't forget to check the other great podcasts available on this PodcastDetroit.com network. Thank you for listening.